Studio Plus, a feast of news, culture, and views.
All right, let's go.
Tune in to meet some fascinating people, share their stories.
China is one of the great creative countries.
Old Beijing style.
Exclusively Chinese musicals.
Studio Plus, something fresh.
Then add in your mushrooms.
Something fun. Something more. Studio Plus. Studio
Plus. That's right. We are Studio Plus, and it's Career Builder Time with Robert Parkinson from RMG Selection. He is the founder of RMG Selection, of course. Now, Robert Parkinson, what is on your mind?
Well, great to be here, as always. I think this week, talent is on my mind,
okay.
And specifically looking at what we mean by the word talent and what talent is and what talent isn't. And in my line of work with the conferences that I go to, people seem to talk a lot. It becomes a bit of a cliche, the word talent, and it's often used to refer to groups of people in the plural. And I actually believe that it's often used inappropriately. And I get a bit sick of hearing about these expressions like the war for talent.
Okay.
For example, so I thought it would be useful to clarify what we actually mean by talent, what talent is, what talent isn't, perhaps some of the characteristics of talent, and what to do if you find out that maybe you don't have talent for something, but you are still involved in that line of work.
And it seems like it's always like a very thrown around word. So
right.
I mean, what exactly is talent? Do you need interest in order to actually get talent? If you're interested in a topic and so forth.
Well, that's an interesting question. I would define talent as being exceptionally skilled or able in a certain field, and I think there are a lot of people who are described as having talent in a particular area. And remember, my firm's expertise is white collar. Office space, finance, HR, recruiting, and so on. Those types of people are described as having talent, but I would often argue that, in fact, they don't really have talent in the true sense of the word. So when I'm talking about talent, I'm talking about people who are exceptional and go far beyond their peer group. Let me give you some examples, okay? So you guys in Beijing have just had, much to my pleasure, a Marks & Spencer's opened up here. Well, the finance director of Marks & Spencer's a few years ago was quite famous for being only 27. And this is a FTSE 100 listed company. You know, that to me is exceptional talent. If you look at a UK cabinet minister, a guy called Sajid Javid, who I think is now in his late 40s, he was one of the I think he was the youngest ever vice president at Chase Manhattan Bank at the age of 25. And, you know, he was the son of an immigrant into the UK, and he's now a multimillionaire. To me, that's talent. If you look at, there have been many films made, very interesting films made about Steve Jobs, and much talked about Steve Jobs. You know, one of the things that was interesting about him to me was that he really did not care about money or really even status. What mattered to him was this passion that he had about making computers items of beauty.
Yep. And also, you know, going into a fish tank, and when the engineers were finished making the iPhone, he would be like, he'd drop into a fish tank and saying, "Look, there's an air bubble. It's too big. Make it smaller. Go back."
That's quite funny. I have actually dropped an iPad into a fish tank deliberately before.
And did you see any air bubbles come out?
No, and it doesn't work.
It's very compact then.
Indeed, indeed.
The examples you just gave were all, you know, young people got into a big company and they became the leader of that company at a very young age. But what do you say of Jack Ma, the Alibaba Group's head?
Yeah.
So do you call him a talent? Because it seems to us for the first 20, not just 20, it's like for the first 40 years of his life, he's been just a normal guy,
yeah.
A normal Jack Ma.
Very hardworking.
But now, He's a different man. He's one of the richest guys in the world.
Yeah, and anyone who can buy a significant stake in the South China Morning Post is not stupid by any stretch of the imagination. So I would certainly say Jack Ma is highly talented. And there was a great quote I think I used last time about from him about why poor people stay poor.
Yeah.
And the point was they never actually change themselves. I think what you're touching on is really interesting, because what we're talking about here is, if you like, if you want to put it in floral terms, flowers that have blossomed and become mature flowers. And in a sense, you know, that from a pragmatic perspective, the issue is, how do we identify what talent is before it's obvious? That is the question. Well, certainly in my business.
Everyone thinks Jack Ma is hard working. You know, he would try to speak English with random foreigners, but it's hard work. How is hard work different from God-given talent?
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, that's an interesting one. I think that, very often, actually, it's better to have people who are true grafters, as we'd say in London, you know, hard workers, rather than people who are just, you know, intuitively get something, or as we would say, you know, are talented. Because in fact, if you have the will to work hard to do something, you know, very often you're likely to be more grateful when you achieve it. You're possibly going to be more humble about having achieved it. You're going to be able to talk to other people about the journey on which you've gone to achieve something. So I think that's important to have hard workers. Nevertheless, it is important to have, you know, life-changing individuals, people who people who are exceptional, I think is probably the right word for it. And I think the point that I would make, you know, from my business, I spend a lot of time interviewing people. And I interviewed a guy yesterday, actually, who was very bright, great CV, great education, but he made a mess of it because he wasn't exceptional. And his attitude was certainly unexceptional. So, you know, I think if we're defining what talent is and what talent isn't, you know, talent is not people who are above average at their jobs. Talent is not people who've been to a good university. Talent is not people who show up on time and follow the rules. I think what talent is often is people who have almost an obsessive passion for their subject or, you know, business or sport or whatever it happens to be. They're really passionate about it, and that's obvious. And the other thing I think that's a key characteristic is that they're not interested in what other people think of them.
Okay. You
know, that's not a motivating factor. Look at Jobs.
Yep.
You know, he drew a salary of $1 million a year at Apple to pay his, you know, probably travel expenses or whatever. You know, he could well have drawn probably 50 times that amount. Yeah, that wasn't what floated his boat, so to speak. It was the technology. It was what they were doing that was interesting. And I don't know the case of Jack Ma very well, but I would suggest that he probably has a similar passion in you know, facilitating trade in China. You know, that is probably what gets him going. It probably isn't his ability to, you know, buy huge penthouses in Hong Kong and so on.
I'm very interested in this case of the substandard interviewee you just had. So you talked about hard work and you talked about all this stuff, but do you think the most important thing is that he didn't exude an interest in the prospective job? And that's probably what lost it.
In this particular case, he could have got in there. He could have been a good candidate for the job, but his approach to various different people in the interview process was there was a lack of honesty, and that's a very important, if you're going to get anywhere in life, it's important to be honest, because if you're not, you kind of come undone pretty
honest?
Quickly. Just in his approach,
he
had a kind of multi-pronged approach to applying for this position, and you would have one conversation with him which would be repeated in a different way to other people. And my position was, I challenged him on this. I said, look, you know, you have talent, you've been to a great business school, your English for a native Chinese is excellent, but you're not mature, pal. You need to go away and have a think about your attitude and how you come across to people. And so you go and do that. And instead of thinking about it and coming back to me and saying, well, actually, you're right, which a lot of people do when you challenge them on something like that, he came back in the way which was very immature and demonstrated...
Defensive,
mm-hmm. and a lack of talent, really.
Interesting. I mean, I've been told, like, it really is about people skills. Like, if you actually take responsibility and say, I screwed up, I did this, use the I word... But if you actually blame someone else or don't take responsibility, you come across as very immature. That's right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And he could have got that job.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it takes a skillful eye to spot the talent before it is obvious on him. But what if someone that you think is a talent, but then he didn't do very well in the interview, would you still recruit him?
Yeah. Well, I think, Li Ningjing, that's a very good point. It does take a skillful eye. And, you know, I would say that's actually why firms like my own are still in business. You know, it's why you can't automate or you know, put recruitment or hiring onto some, you know, clever algorithm or on the internet. You know, that will never happen. It does take the ability to spot a combination of experience, aptitude, belief patterns, behavioural patterns. One thing, for example, to give you a practical example of something I really like, is the DISC-based way of looking at behaviour.
Sure.
DISC stands for dominance, independence, steadiness and compliance. And what's really interesting about people with a great degree of talent, and Jobs would be a good example of this, is he would be highly dominant and highly independent, but steadiness... very low indeed. You know, he's the sort of guy that would be working until 5 o'clock in the morning or you know, would work all week until compliant. You know, people like that have people believe that rules are there to get in their way. They believe that rules don't apply to them. So it's a sliding scale, but you do run the risk with exceptionally talented people of almost going into the sort of sociopathic area. That makes it interesting.
But do you think any company, like any big institution or a big company, can accommodate a person like Jobs? Like if he's,
Can you have two jobs in one company?
Yeah, if he's got talent, but at the same time he cannot get along so well with his co-workers, or he wants to do it his way,
yes.
And probably this way is against the rules of the company. Do you think any company can accommodate
such people?
Well, this
is, and I like the two jobs in one company line. That's
yeah.
I remember that one. But
okay.
I think it's a good question. And I think essentially, let me answer the question in two ways. On the one hand, no, we cannot have a company or an institution full of prima donnas, full of people with egos the size of Manhattan. That's never going to work. But on the other hand, you know, any organization, any team requires a balance of different abilities and skills. And for sure, you know, we do need people who excel in certain areas. So I would suggest the question is, how good are we at managing those people? How good are we at dealing with those people? And, you know, then you go down the road of looking at emotional quotient. Usually if people are EQ, you know, usually if people have a high degree of EQ themselves, then they're better at managing difficult people. Certainly I've observed a lot of companies that have failed because they failed to manage people who you know, are difficult.
I think it's very interesting when you talked about they don't care about what other people think of them, but you also talk about, you know, they need to show up for the job interview. Because you mentioned about London, Boris Johnson, the mayor of London, of course. His hairstyle comes across that he doesn't really care about what people think about him. And also the current, one of the presidential candidates in America right now, Bernie Sanders, his hairstyle's all over the place.
Yeah.
He doesn't care what people think about him either.
Yeah.
I think hairstyle is not that important. I think Boris Johnson and the person that you've just
Bernie
mentioned.
Sanders.
I mean, their hairstyle just give you the impression that he's one of you guys. Why do you mind about his hairstyle?
That's
do you
right.
want him to comb his hair, you know, so
very neatly.
Smooth and neatly?
Well, but, right, and you know, in the case of Boris, I don't know so much about Bernie, but in the case of Boris Johnson is a very clever, I would argue, highly manipulative person who, as you say, he is trying to be in a rather cynical way, a man of the people, but at the same time, not really, because he's also being a bit of a buffoon. So. but he's certainly a talented person. You know, there was a great biography of Boris Johnson where, you know, university peers of he were interviewed, his sisters were interviewed, and you could see from a very early age, his parents were interviewed, from a very early age, this was someone who didn't care about the rules, who didn't care about being different, and he outstood his peer group, and therefore you can, that kind of goes with my hypothesis that talent doesn't really worry too much about what other people think and can be seen from an early age.
It's very interesting. And you say these people, they could be borderline sociopathic. Are they dangerous?
I think people who are sociopathic can absolutely be dangerous because they, you know, the, I'm no psychiatrist, but the definition, as I understand it, of someone who you know, displays sociopathic tendencies is that they have no real grasp on how their behaviour affects and impacts other people. And that does get dangerous. When you have people who are, and I can think of a great example of this, actually, of someone who's a competitor of my company, when you have people who are arch manipulators, that can be very dangerous because, you know, along with power, you know, to use the expression which is much used, along with power in when you're a leader of a firm, also comes responsibility. And if you have the power to influence and manipulate, you've also got to use that in a responsible way. So, you know, people who are vulnerable, women, for example, you have to be careful. And you know, there are examples with, again, sorry to keep going back to the late, great Steve Jobs, but there are examples of people who thought he was an absolute nightmare to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was borderline abuse. You know, I'm sure the European Union could cook up a whole host of rules to, explain what a naughty boy he was.
I think Steve Jobs isn't the only one. There's also another gentleman whose first name is Jeff and his last name begins with Bezo, and I think he has the exact same personality traits.
Indeed.
So how can we motivate exceptional talent? How can a random Joe like myself get this exceptional talent and become, you know, the someone like Steve Jobs?
Well, there's nothing random about you, Joe, but
okay. Okay.
I think the issue often when you've got someone who's talented but at the same time, relatively well-behaved.
Yes.
I think the issue often is rather than what motivates these people, because often these people are self-motivated.
Yeah.
Is the question is not to demotivate them. So don't put barriers up in their way. Don't do things that, you know, they will object to. If you and this again is interesting because it brings science into the whole human resources forum. But you know, you can, if you look at a DISC profile of someone, you can see the types of things that will motivate certain people, and people who have a very high dominant and independent profile, you know, don't give them a job which involves lots of detail and order tidiness, because that will demotivate people like that. The other thing that I think is important is, well, the two other things in terms of the motivation of talent is make sure you have someone who's capable of leading them.
All right.
And of course, also make sure they're in a peer group of people that will keep them on their toes. There's nothing like a bit of competition, healthy competition.
Interesting.
To keep people motivated and to keep people being creative.
But do you make exceptions for them in regard to like company rules?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've thought about this a lot. It's a very good question. And the first person that accurately answers that question will be probably the richest person on the planet. My answer to that one is, you know, you really have to manage each person on an individual basis. Every single decision you make, the success of a company is based on a whole load of very small decisions. Of course, you have to have boundaries, and those boundaries are led by your values. So, for example, one of my values that's very important to me, always has been, is honesty. And if people are, you know, I understand that communication patterns can differ, but if people are blatantly dishonest with me, then I would have a big problem with that. You can look at other things like, you know, the people's work ethic, whether people share things. There's a whole host of different values that you can look at. So I think that will define your parameter.
Right. So in sports, they always talk about the talent as something that you can either exploit or you can waste. So how can you make sure that you do not waste your talent?
I think that's a good question. I think it's about taking risks. Okay. You know, I think one of the ways that you build confidence, particularly in young people, particularly in post-educational people, is to let them take risks, to encourage them to take risks. One of the things I think that is a big no-no, and perhaps this applies in China, I don't know, is a culture which punishes risk-taking and then, getting things wrong. So that's not good. So, you know, taking risks, trying new things, but also at the same time, not giving up immediately. If you start doing something, I remember when I started my job in London in the late 90s, you know, I found it very difficult to start with. You know, I would go home and I'd be sitting on the train thinking, why did I come to work this morning? This is not fun. And then suddenly overnight, something clicked. And I just suddenly started to get it, enjoy it, and I suppose you could say I had some degree of talent for it.
But is this the right way to go? Because when it comes to the economy right now, maybe children should actually consider job security first. It's a priority.
Yeah, I mean, for sure job security is a priority, and people have to weigh that point up based on their circumstances. However, from what I know, people in China have many, many more options than people back in Europe do, for example, or many people do.
Okay, thank you, Robert, for your tips. And hope our listeners will learn something from our conversation. Now it's time to wrap up the second hour of today's show. But stay with us, as coming up in our third hour, we will still have lifestyle news and all those segments.